If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You know, the education from real-world experience are two completely different things. You can read and study and educate yourself as much as you want, but until you actually do it, two different worlds.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Andrew is an accomplished real estate developer, syndicator, sponsor, investment operator, and business owner. With over $36 million of development experience, owning and operating over $5 million in cash flowing multifamily, and having raised over $10 million of private investment capital, Andrew is consistently sought out not only as a partner, consultant, coach, and advisor, but a steward of investor capital. Andrew is passionate about real estate, personal and professional growth, financial education, mindset, and, of course, his family. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
Man, it's awesome. The pleasure's all mine. You know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on. If you can briefly tell us, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how'd you get there?
My real estate career started back in 2001-ish, started in the mortgage business. I got out of college, bounced around to a couple different things, and then landed in the mortgage business. Spent about a decade in the mortgage business and slowly transferred over towards the development side of the business. Got my real estate license and then ended up getting towards the real estate development side of the business. And I've spent the last 10 years, went through my mentoring program and things like that back in 2010, 2011. And 2011, we opened up shop and we've been syndicating development deals for the last decade. And we've been slowly pivoting into more multifamily cash flow opportunities in the past couple of years.
How did you decide? I know you mentioned the words mentor and getting your education, but how did you decide to go into development? Did you have a background in construction?
I did. I actually, my father was an electrician. So growing up, I had spent countless summers and breaks just kind of working with him, going out to new housing developments or just running around to doing existing jobs. So I was always around construction and kind of understood it, had a knack for it. And so it was just kind of a natural, like, I can do this, no problem.
Right, right. Yeah. What was the first thing you built?
Well, the first project we ever did, we jumped in and we gutted a three-family to the studs. So the housing stock in South Boston, Massachusetts, which is where we're based out of, is all 2 to 4 unit properties. A majority of it is 2 to 4 unit residential stacked multifamilies. And so that's what we started with. We started, by jumping in and gutting a three family and converting them to condos.
That's interesting. So you didn't start ground up in that. You started doing rehab, heavy rehab there out of the gate.
We didn't get into ground up development probably for 3 years. So by 2014-ish, we had started our first ground up development.
Right. And by that point, you'd probably built up a nice Rolodex of trades and people that can kind of help you carry those projects forward. Because I'd imagine that's one of the toughest parts of that equation is finding the right qualified trades to get the job done.
Absolutely. I think with any business, it's about building out the right team and making sure you get the right butts in the right seats and in the construction side of it, making sure you're getting quality work for the right price.
Right, right. Yeah. And that even today is a tough one to manage. I mean, you get, five bids for the same job and they can be tens of thousands apart. And you go, what in the world is the difference between this one and this one? I do not know.
Exactly.
That's fascinating. Okay. So where are you guys today?
So today we still have a little bit of, we don't have existing construction exposure right now, which is great based on kind of what happened obviously with COVID and everything like that. I mean, we did have an asset that we were selling that took a little bit of a haircut based on the virus and how the market changed within the last, at the time before we sold them, 9 months. We still have a project that we're working on in the city. It's probably going to be a five unit building. We believe it's going to be a 5 unit building cut down from 6 in the city of Boston now. But we've been pivoting. The last couple of years, we went out and bought a 28-unit multifamily property in the Louisville, Kentucky market. I followed very much the same process as I did when we started getting into the development side of the business as well. We got our coaching and our mentoring. We went in, we went through Fortune Builders back in way 10 years ago when we started getting into the development side of the business. And then on this go around, we went with Ari Mentor, and Dave Lindahl was a local guy here in Boston. So I was like, well, this guy from Brockton can do this. Like, I'm pretty sure I could do it too. So let's do this. So, you know, getting the education, and, you know, the education from real world experience are two completely different things. You can read and study and educate yourself as much as you want, but until you actually do it, two different worlds. So we bought those 28 units in 2018. And, you know, we spent the first year really just trying to operate it, make sure we kind of had a handle on the asset management piece of it, because that's really truly where the, you know, where your deals come together and making sure that you can provide the value to your investors. Yeah, then by 2020, we started, 1920, we started offering on a bunch of different deals in that marketplace. Then never came up with anything, but that's okay. And now, you know, we're adding a couple of pieces to the team, and we're kind of looking to expand into different markets and make 2021 a great year.
Right. Talk about team a little bit. That's something that I think a lot of investors struggle with, is knowing how and when to build team members and or partners or things like that. So have you, I guess, talk to us about how you've utilized other team members.
Sure. I think it's incredibly important when you're building out a new business or a new partnership. You know, partnerships can be very difficult. My advice would be, like, you know, make sure you get along with your partner, but make sure if you're going to partner with somebody, make sure that that partner is good at something that you're not, you know, because you don't want to have all the same skill set on a team, because then all the other important things that people don't want to do don't get done because they don't want to do them.
Right.
So that's always been my advice when building any type of businesses. Make sure your partners are complementary, because you can scale a business better off of complementary pieces than all of the same skill set. So that, to me, has always been kind of the direction I've wanted to go in. And, you know, bringing on and partnering with individuals who have better skill sets than, and by all means, you need to be able to understand what everybody is doing within the team. I think that's very important. So don't overshadow that. But as you scale and begin to replace pieces underneath individuals, you know, those individuals that have the different skill sets, and you need to be able to kind of manage whatever ends up being underneath them. So, you know, I can underwrite, and I'm certainly great with the attorneys and the legal aspect and the inspections and acquisition and developing relationships. But sometimes, like, the underwriting and the financial management piece of it, as much as I understand it, it's not my strong suit. To say I'm an Excel jockey is not the truth. So I've been, you know, certainly looking, and I have a partner that is excellent at that piece of it and the financial management and the asset management of it. My skill set really revolves more over towards some marketing and doing investor relations and understanding investment returns and those types of conversations, but as well as developing relationships in different markets. And so those are kind of my strong suits. So making sure we're bringing other pieces into the team that either can take some pieces away of the things that I do that maybe I'm not the greatest at, and having that self-realization and analysis of yourself that's like, okay, I can do it, but I'm not the greatest at it, so I need to find that piece, is very important. I think that's the best way to move forward in building any type of team.
Yeah, it goes back, and I'm not sure who I'm stealing this from. There might even be a book with the title, The Who Not How Question. Is there a book?
That'd be a good title of a book, yeah.
Yeah. I think it is a book. Hey, so whoever's listening to this, if you want to get on here and be like, Sam, you're an idiot, here's the book, and here's where you buy it on Amazon, feel free. But but seriously, that's something I keep going back to over and over, is who can I bring on that can do this, not how can I do it? Because I find that my skill sets are very, very limited. I'm good at a very few things, and I'm mediocre at a whole bunch of others, and then even suck at, you know, a lot more than that.
Yeah.
So it's like, I want to do what I'm good at and let everybody else take the things that I'm not good at. How were you able to, I guess, offload those things? What were some of the first things you did when you looked for those partners? How did you offload those in a way that made sense, and yet at the same time, you didn't end up just hiring somebody and paying them a ton of money to do it?
Yeah. I mean, I think the difficult part when you're starting out is that, especially on an individual basis, when you're starting out, there is no revenue stream.
Right.
So, you know, you have to be able to find people who want to partner with you and that understand the fact that, look, there's a build, right? There's a building process here with this company, and that, like, as long as you are okay, or like, because you have to be able to analyze the fact that, like, look, if there's no money coming in, you have to have some sort of something else within your personal life that is going to be able to support you.
Right.
I think that's a big part of it, because if you, you know, you might find somebody that is the best at what they, at what they do, but if they can't dedicate the amount of time that you need towards that, it's just not going to work. So, you know, my partner, Angela, you know, she actually is a former controller, corporate controller, and they sold out of their business. So she was semi-retired, and we met through our mentorship group. Actually, we met previous to that through a mutual connection. And to me, I'm always a big relationship person. So I want to make sure that that person and I have certainly aligned interests, as I had mentioned before, in which we did. And she's local to me here in the Boston area. And, you know, once you start to kind of have conversations and it's almost discovery, if you will, of that individual and their background and understanding what they're great at and understanding what they want to do. So I think, you know, being able to have those conversations and develop those relationships are important. And you might be great at developing relationships, but maybe they're not the right fit. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And there may be something in the future with a potential relationship. It might not be that particular thing, or maybe they have similar skill sets to you and they're going to go out and do what you do as well. And maybe there's an ability to potentially joint venture on a deal moving forward. So you don't discard relationships by any stretch of the imagination, but that's generally how I look at it. And I've also networked and with another gentleman that's based out of Nashville. He has an existing business now, but he has a lot more experience and, you know, had up to 1,100 doors at one time and scaled way back down. And we met through the Louisville market. And so we've been collaborating together as well on different models and like it fits, what we're doing together fits. And so he's got obviously more unit experience and more years under his belt from an operations standpoint on multifamily, as well as business operations. And I've got business operations and capital raising and, you know, relationship development. And Angela has analysis and financial wherewithal, being a former CPA and a corporate controller. So, and I've also got other partners. My partner, John, here locally on the development group, he's a great relationship builder. My partner, Darren, here from the development side of things, incredible operations guy. So we are, you know, as we're pivoting, like it's all to us, you know, we're not this established multifamily. We have 3,000 units under our belt. You know, you're kind of almost what I'm talking about. You're kind of almost seeing it live on how I'm looking at relationships that are in my circle and trying to figure out where I can place these partnerships together to advance the goal forward. And we all have our personal goals, and how do our personal goals revolve around our business goals? So that's it. That's a live look almost at kind of where we're at and what we're looking at.
Right. And I think that's a fascinating place to be, because so often once the show's over, people kind of forget like what it took.
Yeah.
In the heat of the moment to be like, oh, wait, you know, we're talking to, you know, this person over here and this person over here. And we're, you know, all of us are kind of going, hey, this could work, or what, how does this fit? So I think it's fun for us to, you know, to kind of see what it is that, you know, what you're doing. So I guess, you know, here's a shameless plug to follow you on whatever platform you post on. I think you and I connected on LinkedIn.
Sure.
So I don't know if you're there very often, but it'll be fun to keep tabs and see how you guys kind of, you know, shape up.
Yeah, absolutely. You can certainly find me on LinkedIn, Andrew Schena, S-C-H-E-N-A. The company name is Capital Equity Partners. You know, I'm on Facebook. I'm not a good Facebooker. I just started really kind of understanding more about Instagram and how powerful those tools can be. It's embarrassing to say I don't do a lot of it, you know, because I know that is very big in business today. But it, you know, my business was built from just relationships and, you know, just word of mouth. That's how I built, old school, right? You know, it's just the way I was, it's from where I come from. I feel like sometimes I'm just beyond that edge of the social piece. You know, I'll be 44 next month. So I certainly sometimes feel like I'm one step age-wise beyond, you know, what, you know, the generation that took that over.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. It's definitely harder for us. It's a discipline for me. There's no doubt.
And that's really what it comes down to, right? It's having the discipline.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of like literally a couple of things I've been writing. Like I'll always, if I'm listening to a podcast or I'm reading a book, and like I'm just taking notes as I go, and discipline is just is one of those things that just frequently comes out. And it's just like, you know what? You just got to be more disciplined. You got to expand what you're doing, but be disciplined about it. And it's easier said than done.
It is. It is. Even you know, part of my morning routine is getting today's episode, because this is a daily podcast. So getting this posted on LinkedIn with the right show notes and quotes, and then getting that on Facebook and on the, I mean, it's just like, oh my gosh. And I need to, these are things that I actually recorded a video this morning for my virtual assistant to start taking a lot of those things over. But those are things that, you know, those are small disciplines. What do you, like, fast forward 1 year from now, what do you want your business to look like?
I'm looking for my business to, I'd like to have probably another 200 units under my belt this year. Mm-hmm. That's from an asset perspective. And obviously I'd like to be under construction already with the, by this time next year, hopefully at least 60% constructed on that 5-unit building. But I'm also looking to, you know, obviously growing my investor pool, you know, growing a presence, growing a following, and, you know, obviously being, having the ability to help consult others and potentially coach others and take my experience and being able to help others. And some of the things when I've done a lot of self-reflection as we've been pivoting here is really for myself personally, thinking about, you know, what is it? What's my purpose? And that's to help others. And if I can use my experience to help others with a hand up, then that's great. I certainly want to be able to do that. And so that's a big part of kind of what I want to be able to do 1 year from now.
Right. No, that's great. I love that. There's a lot of me that kind of makes my skin crawl. I go, oh my gosh, it's going to take an entire year to get 60% constructed. It's not going to take you 12 months to build a 5-unit building. What are, and this is a leading question, of course, what things are impede that progress?
Well, if we were putting a shovel in the ground today, I'd say that we'd probably be 100% done. But we're not. We still have the entitlement process to finish out. We have a neighborhood association meeting tomorrow, and then we still have to have one more abutters meeting before our ZBA hearing date on February 23rd. So we probably won't get, you know, and then we have to do all of the remaining MEP engineering and civil work and all the engineering to put together, then start getting bids. So we probably won't have a shovel in the ground until I'd say July at this point. So, you know, you're probably talking 6 months just to be able to be 60% done. So, I mean, believe it or not, it generally takes between 9 and 12 months, weather delays, construction delays. It's part of the process when building. So it'll be close to a full year before that project is completely done and on the market.
Right. So it sounds like a lot of that time that you're spent is really just getting through City Hall.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
We've been working at it. I mean, obviously coronavirus held us up for about 5 or 6 months, but, you know, we submitted these plans end of March, beginning of April, we submitted these plans. So it's been a long process to get to just this point. Normally it takes 8 months to get through to a ZBA date. And then you got another let's call it 60 to 90 days beyond that to actually get your building permit. So it's usually a year to get through that whole thing. And then you got a whole another year to build it and market it.
Wow. Good for you for having the courage and the patience to figure that process out. And I think that's what scares a lot of builders or development projects or potential developers away from becoming developers.
Yeah.
Because they go, well, that's an impossible process to figure out. I don't even know where to start. Not going there.
Well, trust me, a lot of it's trial by error. If you don't go to school for this and you don't work for a larger development organization and you're just out figuring out on your own, it's a lot of trial and error, or a lot of frustration, but it's, you know, sometimes the best way you learn is trial by fire. So we've certainly had plenty of that over the last decade. And we know about 90% of everything that should be coming at us from that process, but there's always something that you learn. It's another piece of the process that's like, I had no idea. No, because they don't give you a handbook on it.
Right.
You know, the city of Boston isn't like, here's everything you need to do.
Right.
It's just not that way. So you just kind of go through the process. And to be honest with you, I mean, I agree with you in the sense where it's like the 2-year process to get paid and all the machinations in that 2-year process before you really pay your investors out and you actually receive your compensation, it gets to be a grind. And there are so many things that are outside of your control that will affect the performance of the investment in the project. So, you know, obviously coronavirus is a perfect example. You know, 2 years ago, locally here, National Grid had, which is the gas supply, a natural gas supplier here, their union had a strike. So all installations got put on hold. So, and, you know, again, you're ready to go and the whole building's finished, but you have no gas line. So, you know, you, next thing you know, you lose $75,000 in 9 months. So it's just like, you know, so that's, but that's a big reason for me pivoting towards a more consistent, stabilized business model around multifamily,
right?
Which is, it, as you build it, it's certainly, I mean, not the development isn't repeatable, but it's more, it's a more consistent revenue stream and consistent operation than the wild fluctuations that can happen with development and the process, process of getting things entitled and building it and then selling or holding versus, you know, buying existing assets and following a dedicated business plan for that asset and then managing, just managing that process.
Right.
Less volatility and more consistency.
Right. Those are things I think that we all could use right now is less volatility.
Absolutely. Amen.
And more consistency. So that's great. Let's jump into the final four here if we can. If you're going to give one piece of advice to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Take action. You know, educate yourself to the point where you know, or you're confident and you know what you know, but take action because you can study, you can read, you can listen to a million different sources on the topic of investing in real estate. But like I just mentioned, like sometimes you truly don't know until you do. So take the action and just do it.
I love that. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Meditation. I've been, I'd probably say 6 years ago, I read 2016, not 6 years ago. I read The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. And that whole process I still hold today, you know, from meditation and learning different meditations. I think opening myself up to that has allowed me to really be able to react better throughout my day. My tolerance level for things that may surprise me is greater. And instead of acting or reacting to my days, I can almost maneuver around my days better. I for a lack of a better description on what it does for me, it just helps bring me personally clarity and focus and being able to achieve those goals and being able to take the distractions of the day, separate those aside and be able to achieve what I need to do on a daily basis.
When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
My wife and I try to, you know, we try to give back. I mean, let me make it a more pointed from the investment perspective or just like giving back type of
whatever you feel like it is that you do that you say, hey man, this is something I like doing because it, I feel like it makes my fellow man a better person.
To individuals who I have relationships with, I've become very much more attuned to, and I think this is probably the meditation has helped with this, but my personal growth. A lot of things that I've done for my own personal growth and how much I've seen myself grow over the last couple of years, I try to share as much as I can with that. I try to encourage people to, you know, go listen or read a book by Tony Robbins. I'd known about a guy like Tony Robbins. I never really listened or paid attention or read anything of his until 2018, 2019. And after I did, I was like, why have I taken so long to really understand and kind of more about how I operate individually and what are the things I value instead of just, you know, being a almost like a lineman pushing a tackle sled through life, you know, and just grinding and pushing to actually understanding how I operate the world around me and how I have more of an influence. So I try to convey that in lots of different messages to those that I love, those that are within my circle. As far as giving back, part of like, you know, consulting and coaching, I give a lot. I try to, when somebody asks me a question, I'm not very reserved about it. I'll tell them everything I know to a degree, as long as I have the time to do it. I'm very open and transparent, and I'm always willing, like I said, to give a hand up. So that's, you know, and then obviously my wife and I do some charitable work locally with the Ronald McDonald House and stuff like that. But to our fellow investors or fellow people, like just, yeah, giving of your time is probably the most valuable thing.
Oh, and it is, man, and it is, and at times that's a labor of love because you don't know what seeds you're sowing in in whom you're sowing them, and whether or not it's just going to be, you know, wasted effort, or yeah, somebody's going to take it and run. So there is certainly a lot of give that it's just giving. So that's what it is. And you expect nothing in return. So that's great.
Exactly. And you know what? I've always been a guy that it seems, you know, from my high school days, even till today, people always ask my advice or an opinion, and being able to help others is just kind of what has always come natural to me. And I truly enjoy doing it, whether my advice is poignant to them or not. Like, take it on its face, and whether you do something with it or not is up to you. But yeah, man, just giving back, being positive, and giving back to people in a positive way.
That's great. I love that. I know you've already answered this, but just so that our listeners can find it in the same format that it's always given in the sequence of the show, how do we get in touch with you?
Sure, man. Best way to get in touch with me, LinkedIn, Andrew Schena, S-C-H-E-N-A. You can check out my website as well. You can contact me through there. It's CAP, C-A-P as in Peter, equitypartners.com. You can contact me through there, through email. And yeah, those are the two best ways.
Awesome. Andrew, thanks so much for your time. Certainly appreciate it. This was great.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. I genuinely appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.